It's the Cooper and Anthony Show.
I figured out how to get you interested in my stories and my lists now. Is I got to come up with stuff that appeals to you.
Okay, what do you mean by that exactly?
Things about movies you probably didn't know before.
Oh, I see, because I really hate when you do lists.
Right.
So you have found a way to get me interested in a list by making it something that I might be interested in.
Yes. So,
got it.
Like Rachel McAdams' wig in Mean Girls.
Yeah.
Was real human hair. And it was very expensive.
Most wigs are. They don't use fake wigs in movies all that often.
But this one cost $10,000.
Okay, that's a lot.
Which was
that's a lot.
Inspired the joke that her hair was insured for $10,000.
Oh, I see.
So her hair actually did cost $10,000.
Interesting. Okay, that I didn't know. A Mean Girls fact I didn't know. Good for you.
Anne Hathaway was actually the 9th choice to play Andy in The Devil Wears Prada.
Who were the other 8 choices? Did they say?
No, they don't say because who turned it down? We know that Kristen Durst, Scarlett Johansson, and Natalie Portman.
I would imagine Natalie Portman was probably their first choice because remember at the time she was doing all those great movies. Everybody loved her. She had done The Professional. She had done Black Swan. I mean, she was like the darling of Hollywood. She was about to do all the Star Wars stuff. So she probably had no use for
Rachel McAdams actually was their first choice.
Ah, of course.
And she turned it down. So
yeah.
Did you know that Toy Story 2, when they were working on it, actually got deleted? Somebody deleted the computer that had like 45 minutes worth of Toy Story 2 on it.
You know, there's a Tony at every office. There's a guy at every office who's your Tony, the moron guy that's going to do the stupid thing that is just, it's so simple to not do, but there goes Tony just fucking it up.
Yeah. Whatever you do, do not press the end key. Okay.
Right.
No, do not. I'm telling you, when you're working on this movie, don't hit the end key. And the guy hit the end key, and then he had to call somebody and say, I deleted it. And it was months of work gone.
Whoa.
But one of the film's directors was actually leaving on maternity leave and wanted a copy sent to their computer at home. So that was what actually saved the computer.
Oh, okay. So when they called and said, hi, I Tonied it up, luckily somebody had saved it.
The iconic scene in Clueless where Cher gets mugged and she can't lay on the ground because of the dress.
Right.
Whatever kind of dress it is.
Uh-huh.
That actually happened to one of the writers of the movie. He was in an Armani suit and the guy said, get down. And the guy's like, I can't get down. This is Armani. So that's how the joke made it into that.
That's a good joke.
The Whitney Houston song, I Will Always Love You, was supposed to be What Becomes of the Brokenhearted is the main theme for Bodyguard. But at the last moment, they changed it because that song was used in Fried Green Tomatoes. So they had to make a change at the last moment.
And that was an iconic change because that song was already doing well at radio, but that really put it over the edge. That made it like an iconic song that people that don't listen to the radio knew that song.
Yeah, and you don't remember the movie, but you remember the song.
Sure, yeah.
So the original script for the Addams Family, it was supposed to be revealed at the end of the movie, Uncle Fester was an imposter.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
But Christina Ricci voiced her concern about the ending, and Barry Sonnenfeld decided to change the scene after talking to her.
That is interesting. As somebody who's worked on movie sets in the past and have been on movie sets, I'm always surprised when a director will listen to an actor give a major change in the script. I've seen that happen. And I'm always surprised that, like, because when you're on a set, you're supposed to just do the job you're supposed to do. One time I was on a movie set and I had the hair people were fixing my hair and my makeup had run. And the woman said to me, your makeup is running. Go find somebody for makeup. And it's like, you're standing right here. Can't you just give me one of the things in your bag so I can... No, I'm not allowed to touch your makeup. Everyone has their jobs. So I had to go find a makeup person because the hair person, she's like, I'm not even supposed to be telling you about this. It's like, she couldn't even tell me my makeup was running. So everybody really sticks to their jobs on movie sets. So I'm really surprised that not only did Christina Ricci speak up, but that Barry Sonnenfeld actually listened to her.
Richard Gere originally turned down Pretty Woman. He said, I ain't going to do it. Not going to happen. Julia Roberts actually flew to New York to have lunch with him and wrote on a little piece of paper, please say yes.
Wow.
And so he said, yeah, I'll do it.
I'll be honest with you. That's the one thing that always bothered me about that movie. I didn't think he was well cast.
Really? He was perfect for that.
I didn't think so. Yeah, I always felt that there was just something kind of off.
You got a hard on for that movie. I don't know why, but you got something against. There's some, that movie hurt you in some. I don't know how.
I was traumatized by it.
Yeah, there's something about that. It's the perfect chick flick, and for some reason, I mean, you hate Titanic and you hate Pretty Woman. It's either A, you're from another planet, or I don't know.
Okay, let me be clear. I thought Julia Roberts was amazing and perfectly cast
Gere
in that movie.
Richard Gere was perfect for that movie. 1,000,000% perfect.
I thought he was too stiff, and I did not buy that she fell in love with him. I didn't buy it. She was so, like, funny and fluid and happy, and he just seemed... I didn't get what she fell in love with. I didn't get it at all. I thought that was completely miscast. He was really stiff. He was not interesting. He was way too serious. I did not understand him or her falling in love with him. I thought she could do better than Richard Gere. And Titanic, Kate Winslet's my favorite actress on the planet. No, listen, you brought it up. I got to defend myself. She's my favorite actress on the planet. There's nobody better than Kate Winslet in anything ever, forever. But that movie was so manipulative. I hated the fact that how corny it was. Mm. The music swells, like, cry here, insert emotion here. Just make a movie. Let me decide when I want to cry and get upset. I don't know. I rolled my eyes out loud. I didn't like Titanic.
Yeah, and nobody else liked it. It made no money, by the way, at the movie theater. Red Dawn from 1984, the first movie ever to be rated PG-13.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So the big problem happened when the Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom movie was released. And that was released as a PG movie. That and Gremlins were released as PG movies. But people were complaining it was too violent and too gory for small children and preteens. And those are the movies that actually sparked the Motion Picture Association to come up with the concept of PG-13, which means parents strongly cautioned some material may be inappropriate for children under 13. That wasn't even a thing. So it was Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom and Gremlins that kind of made that happen. And then it turned out that Red Dawn happened to have been the first film that when it was reviewed by the Motion Picture Association, that was the first film that they actually gave it a PG-13 rating.
Speaking of Gremlins, the original script had Gizmo as the villain, but it turned out the audiences thought he was too cute, so that's why they had to make the Stripe character, because he was evil. Hopelessly Devoted to You wasn't included in the filming of Grease when it completed, but Olivia Newton-John had a clause in her contract where she had to do a solo number, so they had to go back and shoot that scene and write that song.
That's so funny, 'cause that song is so iconic.
Yeah, and they didn't even have it when they finished it.
That's hilarious. I love that. But that's so crazy. So that's in her contract, and they make the whole film and what, like, ignore her contract? The director wasn't like, hang on a minute, guys. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
No, they went, rap, that's a rap. And she went, what, hold on, time out. Where's my song?
Right.
And they went, shit.
Wow.
The movie Cleopatra was not a box office bomb. It was the highest grossing film of 1963, but it was so expensive to make, it didn't turn a profit. So it almost bankrupted 20th Century Fox.
That's, well, I would imagine Liz Taylor's salary alone. I mean, she was a huge star then. They must have paid her a buttload of money.
They had to sell 300 acres of their back lot to stay afloat. And that area now is the modern day Center City.
Get out. That's crazy.
Yeah. So you didn't know that. Truman Capote, who wrote Breakfast at Tiffany's, actually wanted Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, everybody wanted her back then.
Yeah, and he didn't like Audrey Hepburn's performance at all.
But how, was Marilyn Monroe dead by then? What happened?
No, she turned the role down. She turned it down. She said, I don't want to do it.
Well, the reason why Marilyn Monroe turned it down is because the role was supposed to be a prostitute. That the character was supposed to be like a, he called it, Truman Capote called it an American geisha. But her acting teacher, Lee Strasberg, said, no, that's too much like a prostitute. And playing a prostitute-like character would be really bad for your image and really bad for you, your career as an actress, which is so funny when you think about like how Pretty Woman playing a prostitute is the thing that launched Julia Roberts' career. But, you know, 40 years earlier, that was a career killer.
Speaking of Marilyn Monroe, the iconic scene, 7 Year Itch, where her dress blows up. So they had to shoot that in California.
Was she standing over a New York subway grate? Okay.
But they had to move it to California because every time they went to shoot it, the crowd would go in New York. So they couldn't shoot it in New York because the crowd wouldn't shut up. So they had to do it on a back lot.
Oh, that's funny.
In the 1940s, bad time for Disney. The studio was over $4 million in debts when they came out with Cinderella. And if Cinderella would have been a flop, it would have destroyed Disney.
Think about that. If Cinderella was a flop, all the things that we know now that are Disney, everything Disney, which is a multi-billion dollar company at this point, the channel, all the money they've put into everything, Disney World, Disneyland, none of that would exist.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, nobody wanted to finance it. Walt Disney actually mortgaged his home to help finance it.
Wow.
So he put everything into all these movies, and if they didn't make it, that was it.
Yeah, he believed in it. Look, that's, regardless of how you feel about him, it just shows like when you really believe in something and feel strongly about it, sometimes it's worth taking the risk.
And, you know, I got to end with a Yoda one.
Of course.
Originally, Yoda was only supposed to be in The Empire Strikes Back. But after George Lucas consulted with a child psychologist, he decided to include the character in Return of the Jedi so he could confirm that Luke, in fact, was Darth Vader's son.
What's it got to do with Yoda?
Because Yoda's actually the one who says, yes, he is your father.
Yoda, I must know. Your father is.
Okay. So they had to bring him back. He wasn't going to be in the third one, but he was.
So just so he could say that one line.
And die. So Yoda actually died in it, which probably you don't know because you've never seen it.
Will I rest? Yes.